having things that have leaves and roots, give us a call at 977-1070. We'd love to help you out and solve whatever issues that you're having out in the garden. There's so much going on this time of year, so much to be doing outside. And, well, let's see, about the last week, week and a half, almost 2 weeks, it's been a little difficult to get out there and get much done out in the garden. It's been so wet and so rainy the last little bit, but thankfully today should be a nice sunny day finally. Things have a chance to dry out a little bit. Be a good day to get out there and get some of the things done that have been kind of hanging for the last little while because of all the rain. And it's also a good day to get out and just kind of take a walk through and see what all has changed in the garden over the last couple of weeks. One of the things that is always amazing, after a big bout of rain like this is how everything just kind of explodes into growth. Some things in a good way, some things not. One of the things that always happens when we get a big dose of rain like this, it seems like the weeds come out of everywhere. And there's just weeds on top of weeds on top of weeds out in the garden. But the flip side of that is with all the nice rain, it makes them really, really easy to pull and get up out of the ground. So it's a good time to just give the garden a good once over and see what all is happening out there and what kind of issues have cropped up. And then if you can get it done quick enough and get back to the radio and the phone, you can give us a call and we can help you out with it. We've got a caller on the line, so let's go to the phones. Good morning. You're on the Snow Nose Gardening Show.
Hi. I'm hoping to ask a question about lawn care.
Okay. Go right ahead.
Are we on right now?
We are.
Oh, okay. In March, I called up and said I have this really raggedy lawn. What should I do? And I put some lime on it like I was supposed to do.
Okay.
Then it was suggested that I put pre-emergent broadleaf and fertilizer on it in March, which I did. And you were the people who suggested these things. So my lawn looks pretty darn good right now. And then in April, you said fertilize, which I did, and it looks really good. But now I've got clover and weeds.
Okay.
What's next?
Yeah, the next thing is to hit it with a post-emergent broadleaf weed control that'll take care of some of the more perennial weeds like the clover and things like that that actually come back from the roots of the weeds that were there the previous season. And there's some warm season weeds that are going to be coming on now that the weather's warming up that weren't around earlier in the season get controlled with some of the other weed treatments that go on early in the season. But I use a product called Weed Beater Ultra. Correct. And that's available in a little trigger bottle that you can just spot spray with, or also comes in a concentrated form either that you hook directly up to the hose or that you can mix up in a tank sprayer and just treat those areas that have all those, the clover and all those other things cropping up, and that'll do a really good job at eliminating all of those.
Who makes Weed Beater Ultra?
It's from Bonide.
Okay, good. And another question. I don't know. There's no way to get deer away from eating my knockout roses. Everybody in the world has wonderful, beautiful knockout roses, but mine are bare.
Yeah, there's a couple different things that you can do to help to keep the deer off. Have you tried any of the repellents?
No, I did years ago on other things, and it would be great for a while, and then somehow the rain or my going away, and then they just had lunch when I was gone.
Yeah, some of the ones that are available now have a much longer residual on them than some of the older ones. They'll last a good 4 to 6 weeks. And the other thing that we find that really, really helps is to rotate the product that you use.
Oh,
so that you use...
Okay, they don't become indifferent to it.
Right. After a while, yeah, they kind of get used to it and it doesn't bother them anymore. So if you're able to kind of keep them guessing, rotate the so that it's a different smell every so often, then it keeps them off balance and keeps them guessing as to what's going on, and they don't like it.
Okay, that makes sense. Last question. Do you advocate preen? Using preen?
Yeah, it's good stuff. It does a good job at helping to keep weeds from sprouting up in your planting beds and things like that. You can even use it in your vegetable garden.
Mm-hmm.
You just start with a good clean slate. Get all of the weeds that are already up and growing, get those out of there, because it doesn't do anything for them.
Right.
But it'll keep the seed that's down there in the soil germinating, and will help to keep it virtually weed-free for a good 3 months.
Good. All right. Thank you for all your good advice. I enjoy your show.
Well, we appreciate you calling and mostly appreciate you listening.
Oh, well, my pleasure.
All right. Have a good day now.
Thanks.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye.
Snow Nose. Snow Nose. Snow's Garden Center. See, I'm not late, Norman. I still hear the music playing. Hey, guys, it's Scott Price. I'm sitting here taking your calls this morning at 977-1070. Give us a call and let us know what you have planned in the garden today, what you may need some help with, any of those little things that are driving you crazy, and we'll try to help you out.
Well, one thing, I was talking earlier about, it's been a good couple of weeks that we've had rain virtually every day.
Every day. I have been wet more times this week. You'll go to one side of town and it'll be sunny, and as soon as you start driving, it'll be wet somewhere else, and then you'll get started, and then here comes a little shower. I was literally the other day driving up 29, and I was, kind of just going straight north, and for about 4 minutes, it was raining literally on one side of the car and not raining on the other side of the car. So, it was just crazy. This has been some crazy weather.
It really has. And one of the things that we really do need to keep an eye out for now in the garden following all of this rainy weather is if you've had fungus problems in previous seasons, like things like powdery mildew on your lilacs and your peonies and of course, rose diseases and things like that, anything that is prone to get leaf-type fungus diseases, that this has been virtually incubator conditions for those kinds of diseases.
And especially with what's going to happen next week. They're calling for it to be kind of dry and really warm. So you may have noticed I was the second person in line at the cash register today at the garden center, and I got myself a big bottle of Funginex, and that's on my plan for the rest of the day today, is to get home and get some of that spraying done. Because the way to think about it is, like any of your garden practices, you're doing the right thing. You're being as sustainable and as wise in the garden as you can to start early. Okay.
Right.
So with the Funginil, which is the product that I'm going to be using today, there are actually two application rates. There's a preventative rate and a curative rate. So, what I'm doing is I'm getting, ahead of the curve here. I'm going to be putting this stuff down because I know it's a problem. It's been a problem in the past. I know what the conditions are, and I'm going to be using the smallest amount of product possible, which is, of course, sustainable, but also I'm really, really cheap. So this product's not, it's expensive.
Right.
So the earlier I put it down, the less product I'm going to be using that's better for the environment, as well as, better for
your wallet.
My wallet. And I like that.
I like that too. I'm horrible cheap too.
I'm a cheap guy.
But, not only is it more sustainable, you're using less product, but all of your fungicidal treatments are much more effective as a curative than a curative. They work much better to prevent the problem before it really gets started than they do to clean up the problem once you've identified that it's already there.
Right, because remember how most of your funguses and that type of thing is vectored. It spreads by, you actually being in the garden. So, if you're in the lawn and you've got fungus in the lawn, well, that lawnmower wheel is just taking that fungus and spreading it all over the place.
Or your feet, or the kid's ball, or the dog feet.
Same thing, on your plants. As those leaves fall off, they're just vectoring it to something else. So you can spray and get that preventative done, then, it really is worth doing. And very seldomly, I'm not a guy who goes out and just says, spray, spray, spray. Just go, I don't like to use products that try to do everything.
Right.
Because what happens is very often you don't have some of the problems that this product is taking care of, and that's just not smart gardening. But in a scenario like this, you know, for the fungicide applications, for the applications for lace bugs on azaleas and that type of thing, we know the problem's going to exist. So the earlier, the better on those things.
Right. And it's just, you know, it's just one of those things that you're better off to just go ahead and get it taken care of, prevent the damage before it gets started. Your plants are going to be much healthier. You're going to be using much less product out there in the environment, and everything and everybody's just going to be a lot happier doing it that way. And this, and as you say, there are very few scenarios where we recommend doing that, but this is one of them where you've had fungus problems in the past, or you have some of these plants that are very susceptible. They're, you just know they're going to have it. Just go ahead and get it taken care of, and it's going to be better off for everybody. Good morning. You're on the Snow Nose Garden Show.
Good morning. I'm calling about my relatives are moving from Michigan here, but I don't think they're going to come unless I promise them that there are wild mushrooms, morels. Are you familiar with morels?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Do they grow wild here in Virginia?
They sure do.
They do.
Oh, right. Like where?
In the wild.
Yeah, just, you know, a lot of the woodland areas, particularly some of the moister areas, mm-hmm. and you know, near stream banks and things like that.
Right. The most important thing whenever you're doing that, you know, we always recommend that if you are going out mushroom hunting, you need to first have an identification book, because mm-hmm. you need to be sure that you identify the good ones from the bad ones. Mm-hmm. But the other thing to do is then remember what it is that the mushrooms are looking for. You know, what is it that they want? And the more you can kind of identify their habitat, then you can kind of know where to go look for them. Mm-hmm. Old growth forests that have a lot of leaf clutter down on the ground, mm-hmm. You know, mushrooms like that, very, very loose, really, really deep, rich organic material. Like anything else, any of those plants, the fungus, the lichens, the mushrooms, north-facing slopes, you know, are very conducive for their growth. But the most important thing is, you know, just to start to look. And as soon as you find some, identify the environment they're in, and then you can kind of know where to go to start looking for them.
Okay, that's perfect. And once you find them, will they be there year after year?
Typically, yes, because the way a lot of these mushrooms and things like that grow is the actual mushroom that you're eating is the fruiting body of the fungus. It's what the fungus puts up to the surface to generate spores that go out and propagate the fungus. But the fungus itself is a series of hair-like, what are called mycelium, that grow in that rich organic layer, in the decomposing organic matter that's at or below the soil surface. And that colony just kind of spreads out everywhere in that area, as long as there's lots of food source for it to take advantage of, you know, that organic decomposing material that's there in the soil, mm-hmm. that network is going to be there. And then when the conditions are right and the season is right, it puts up these big fruiting bodies to reproduce. And those are the actual mushrooms that, you know, that we come by and pick and eat. So as long as those conditions are there and conducive to the fungus growth, then those mushrooms will be there year after year.
Right. And then the one thing to remember is that the flowering, you know, has to have very specific environmental conditions. So the moisture has to be there. You know, all those conditions have to be right. So not only is it, you know, where to find them, but it's also what time of year to find them. It's actually interesting you mention that, because I've got a trip up to Michigan coming up in the end of the summer, and that's one thing on our list is to go out mushroom hunting. And it would be the first time I've ever done it, so I'm pretty excited about it. So it's a neat topic.
Nice. And so speaking of season, what is the season for it?
Well, typically it's going to be when it's nice and moist. The spring weather right now is perfect, as well as the fall. Now, you know, you will find in the middle of the summer, you're not going to see it, because typically the moisture may not be there.
Uh-huh.
But if you find an area that's low and boggy and, you know, and has some moisture to it, then you may find them at that period of time.
Okay. Well, okay. This is very helpful.
Great.
And now, will you advise my husband and my son to get off their lazy duffs and go cut the grass?
Hey, you guys, get out of the house and go play in the yard.
Thank you.
Mama said so.
There you
There you go.
Thanks.
Hey, thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye now. Yeah, and that's actually a great point. I mean, you know, if it's been difficult to get out and get much mowing done because of the wet weather and everything, but it really is important that you get out there as soon as you possibly can and get it cut, because the taller it gets, the more problems that's going to create, not just for, you know, not just in terms of more work for you as you mow, but it's also much more injurious to the turf, because you're going to be taking off so much.
I actually mowed my grass 3 times in 1 week. I mowed it last Sunday, I mowed half of it on Tuesday, and then it started raining. The other half on Wednesday, and then I mowed again last night. And that's the key. You know, don't cut your grass too short, and also don't let it get too long. So if you're going to have that good, green, lush turf that's very healthy, you know, you can't leave all those clippings and have them mat down in the ground. There's a couple of things that I learned, you know, over the last few days to really save you some time and effort and energy in the garden. And
welcome back to the Snow Nose Gardening Show. I'm Norm Carlson.
And I'm Scott Price.
And we're taking your calls and questions at 977-1070. We had somebody who was calling in just as we went to break, so give us a call back now. We'll get you on right away and get you an answer to your question. There's just been so much going on with the torrential downpours and just the steady wet and everything over the last little while. I know I've got just a bunch of things that are going crazy in the yard. Not, you know, some things that are, you know, it's a good thing that they're growing like crazy. Other things, not so much, with the weeds that have really come on and taken over. And with a lot of the pre-emergent weed controls that we put down, if you've used things like Weed Screen or Preen in your planting beds, one of the things that happens when we have a lot of rain like this, particularly if you got it down fairly early in the season, as that water moves its way through the soil, it has a tendency to leach a lot of those products out and reduce the amount of, you know, the length of time that they're effective for. So you may want to seriously think about putting down a supplemental application of some of those pre-emergent weed controls in your planting beds now as a result of all of this rain. It's not that they don't, you know, that they quit working. It's just that the rain has leached them out of the soil, and it's time to make another application to keep that successful weed control going.
As well as your fertilizers. You know, it's not too late right now because of, you know, the moisture that we have to go ahead and do some fertilization. My containers, I've noticed, are really looking bad, number one, because the sun hadn't been shining. They've been completely waterlogged, but I know that they're going to need a whole lot of additional fertilizer because that fertilizer has just, I mean, that what was in there has just really leached all the way through and out of those containers.
Right. So that's something that, you know, a couple things to kind of keep in mind. Well, let's go to the phones. Good morning. You're on the Snow Nose Gardening Show.
Hello.
Good morning.
Yes. This is for Scott.
Hey, Imogene.
How did you know it was me?
I love your voice. I just love it when you call.
Listen, the reason I'm calling is I have been bombarded with people ringing my doorbell, people taking photographs of my front yard. Do you have a sign?
We can put a sign up over there.
Oh, I would appreciate it so much. This gentleman from out in the county came by and he said, can I please take a photograph because I'm building a house and I want landscaping like this.
Well, excellent. You give him my name, and then that's absolutely perfect. Imogene has a wonderful Oriental style house, and we did a landscape that was very minimal, easy for her to take care of, but very effective. Really fits with the architecture of the house, and the place looks great. So
now, let me ask you this: do you sell that mulch in bags?
We do. We've got the double shredded hardwood product is what we use for Imogene, and we have a very light, soft texture that's really dark color that she really liked, and we have it, of course, in bulk if you need a lot, or in bagged if you need, you know, just a little bit.
Yeah, I wanted to do a little bit on the other side over there.
Yeah.
Okay. And another thing, do you do pruning?
I'm sorry?
Do you do pruning at this time of the year?
Oh, of course. You know, the thing about pruning is you want to always remember the difference between trimming and pruning. Right now is a great time to go back and prune on some of your spring flowering shrubs, your azaleas, your rhododendron, anything that's finished flowering, because what happens is it's going to spend the rest of the summer producing its flower bud for the following year. So this is a perfect time to prune things like that.
Yeah, well, in my backyard, if you remember, I've got a tremendous amount of azaleas and
right.
I want them trimmed and cleaned out.
Yeah, this is a great time of year to do that. As well as, you know, when we do pruning and trimming, we really want to be careful that not only are we removing unattractive growth, mm-hmm. but we're encouraging good positive growth also.
Yes.
So,
well, these have been in there, 20, 30 years?
It's been around.
Yeah, and they've just grown all out of shape.
Yeah, well, we could easily come in and thin them out for you so that they'll produce layers of foliage.
Okay.
That'll give you some better bloom inside the plant for next year, and then, you know, kind of get them back in shape for you.
Okay, well, sometime when you come by, we'll talk and see what we can do back there this summer.
That's it. Imogene just got a brand new little puppy, and I love to go visit. Every day the puppy has on a different color sweater. So,
oh, he's a jewel. Well, listen, I really appreciate everything, and I hope you have a wonderful weekend.
You too, sweetheart.
Okay. Talk to you later.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye. Really, one thing that I want to encourage folks is we do a lot of landscape work with customers, and we have a lot of different services. Remember, Snows is a multifaceted horticultural services company. We have a garden center, we have a landscape division, we have commercial and residential maintenance, bulk material. The way I describe it is if it happens outside of your house, we've done it or know about doing it. And the most fun for me, I love every morning. I get up and I run straight to work, and I just love it because I get to work on so many different properties. But for me, my clients, it's just relationships. They're just great mm-hmm. friends, and I get to enjoy, you know, their garden with them. And it's a long-term commitment that I have with my clients, and everybody at Snows feels the same way. We don't want to come and do something for you today and take your money and never see you again. You know, we just celebrated our 99th anniversary here, and we're looking forward to our 199th because we want long-term relationships with folks. We want to help you solve your problems, and that's why we do this every Saturday, and that's why we continue to do it. So let's get right back to the phone lines.
Good morning. You're on the Snow Nose Gardening Show.
Hello. My name's Kelly. I have a question about apple trees.
Okay.
So we had these wild apple trees. They were huge and bushy and really old, and I cut about two-thirds of them off. This past fall or spring. And I put plant tone down, 10 pounds of plant tone per tree around the base of it, and a little borax too to get the boron levels up.
Okay.
And then the one thing that I'm missing is spray, apple tree spray. And I was wondering what you would suggest for that.
Yeah, probably the easiest way to deal with that. There's a couple of different combination spray products that do a great job at taking care of all the different problems that apple trees and peach trees typically get. There's a myriad of issues that they have. There's insect problems that can get on the fruit, on the foliage. There are fungal problems that attack the foliage and the fruit also. And, you know, several different ones each. And it's most effective and easiest to get one of these combination fruit tree spray products. And that's typically what they're called. And Bonide makes a couple of different ones. They're just called fruit tree spray. And they handle they're formulated to handle all of the different aspects of growing successful fruit trees. They handle the fungal diseases. They handle the insects. There's something that you put on, typically starting when the buds first begin to swell early in the spring, and then you do them about 2 weeks or so, every 2 weeks, throughout the growing season, right up until you know, a couple of weeks before the fruit is ready to harvest. And the difference in the two different formulations that are out there. One is traditional with you know, the traditional insecticides and fungicides in it, and the other is a more organic control that essentially does the same things as the conventional, but just using more organic type products in the formulation, so that there's a little bit of a minimalized impact on the desirable insects and the environment in general.
Yeah, gotcha. So, do you think I'll see fruit this summer?
How much bloom did you see this spring?
Not too much, actually.
Yeah, you may see a few.
Yeah.
But just get on the spray program anyway, okay, because that'll help to keep the tree healthy.
Yeah.
Which is important, is keeping the fruit clean. You want to keep that tree nice and healthy,
okay,
especially where you did a significant amount of pruning on it.
Yeah.
The other thing that I would encourage you to do is, as the season progresses, you'll probably see a lot of very vigorous upright shoots that come off of the remaining branches,
right,
and particularly in the areas where you made some of the heavier cuts, you'll get a lot of what are called water sprouts.
Yeah.
And you want to make sure that you remove those, because they take a lot of vigor away from the plant,
okay,
in undesirable growth.
Gotcha.
And that'll help to encourage a lot of the energy to be directed into producing flower buds and things like that for next spring.
Great, thanks.
Yep. Well, Kelly, it sounds like you did everything right. So I think by you reducing the size of them, that's probably where you lost a lot of your fruiting wood,
yeah,
in the flower, because it's typically on the new growth. But
right,
the way to look at it is, keep your trees healthy this year and then start that program. It's something you kind of have to, if you want perfect fruit, it's something you have to be very religious about. You have to really be determined to stay on top of it. But I think next year you'll have some of that new growth, and
right,
and you should be heading in the right direction.
Great. Appreciate it, guys.
Good luck with that.
Alrighty.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate you calling. All right. Our number is 977-1070 if you have a question that you'd like to ask. But apples are probably the most challenging of all of the fruit to grow, followed by peaches, and the pears are a little bit easier than that. And of all of them, cherries and apricots are probably the easiest.
Yeah, and that's typically the way that I recommend. If you want to get into it, I think the easiest fruit with the highest success that I experience is blueberries.
Right.
Really are very, they're beautiful landscape shrubs. They are very productive. You can get a whole lot of benefit from them in a very short period of time. Then as you start to get into your fruit trees, yeah, they're really neat plants and they're great to have. But, you have to also ask yourself at some point, what is it I'm looking for? Am I looking for, what is this tree I'm growing, number one? If it's a wild apple, it's probably not a great eating apple. It's more like a cooking apple. And on a cooking apple, you can have some, blemish on the fruit that you can cut out and that type of thing. So, you kind of can help to manage your orchard or your fruit production that way. The other thing is, one thing I meant to mention to Kelly is, he's probably going to be very, very happy in the next few years with the quality of fruit that he gets, because by reducing the quantity often, you end up with a much higher quality.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes for any fruit production or vegetable production or anything like that. I live in a lot of shade. But I grow tomatoes, but the hardest thing for me to do is to, get rid of some of those blooms every once in a while and to take some fruit off, because I just don't have enough sun for everything to mature well. But by reducing the amount of fruit, I get much better quality. And it's, that's one of the ways to think about it, especially some of those older fruit producing plants or, bearing plants or whatever the case may be.
Right. And typically, if you want to get nice, big, really, really high quality, large fruit, the plant can typically, think of it as, the plant can support X number of pounds of fruit. And you can either, that X number of pounds can be comprised of a lot of little bitty ones or a few really big ones. So, the fewer there are, the bigger the ones that are there are going
to
be.
Yeah, the best way to think about that is, think about those jumbo pumpkin growers. If you ever watch one of those guys grow some of those giant pumpkins, they reduce the plant down to one fruit. They take everything else off the vine. They do everything that they can to get that energy focused on that one piece of fruit. We see it in the orchards all the time. We see it in the vineyards especially. They go through and thin through the vineyards so that the quality of the grape is going to be that much better. But it really is fun and very rewarding. If you want to get started on some fruit production or some vegetable production, we've got some great things at the Garden Center. The selection of blueberries is still really, really good.
Yes.
And I've even been eating a few off the vines that are out there. They're not quite ready yet, but they're okay.
That's who's been getting
all those. Yeah, sorry. I'm there early in the morning, so I take that early morning walk, and yeah, there's been a couple of strawberries I've nipped off and a few things. But I was out there today looking around, and we've got some fantastic patio tomato containers that are absolutely beautiful. I mean, fist-sized tomatoes on them right now. So if you want a good start, you know, come out and get one of those. Pop it up on your patio, and you know, you may be slicing some fresh tomatoes in a couple of weeks with those.
And those tumbling tiger hanging basket tomatoes are really, really neat. They've got a lot of fruit on them already that are getting up there about the size of a grape tomato right now.
Yep.
And, you know, we'll be getting much larger as the season progresses. But I would expect, if you want tomatoes by 4th of July, that there's going to be mature, ripe ones on those for sure.
Oh, easily. And, you know, we've got a great selection still in. It's not too late to get that stuff in the ground, to go ahead and get it done.
And I know a lot of people that, you know, for whom that's really been an issue this spring because it's so wet. I was talking to a friend of ours that has a farm up in Greene County, and he was talking about, you know, just the problems that particularly the farmers are having right now, just being able to get into the fields and work because the soil has been so wet, and you know, we're facing the same problem, you know, getting in and working up your vegetable garden and everything. It's been so wet. It's just really hard to get out there and get it done, but you've still got plenty of time. You know, things may come into harvest a little bit later, but the flip side, it's been so cool that a lot of the things, even if they were in earlier in the season, haven't grown, so you really haven't lost that much time.
And that's exactly where I am. I was so proud of myself. I got out there early this year, and I got my tomatoes and my peppers and everything in really early. And then since then, it's been so cool. The sun has not shone a bit at my house. and the stuff is sitting there looking just like it did 3 weeks ago. So it's not too late. If you do want a head start and a jump start on the season, we do have still a great selection as well as some really mature plants. What were the containers I saw that have tomatoes and was it parsley or cilantro in them? Or
a patio, you know, patio garden. It's got a patio tomato. Some parsley, there's chives, I think oregano or thyme.
Yeah.
Maybe both. I'm trying to remember what all's in there. It's quite a bit.
I walked down that row and I looked over at this plant and I'm like, I don't even know what that thing is. So I walked over a little bit closer and somehow got distracted. But you know,
if
you want a whole, you know, vegetable garden in one container, we got it for you with your vegetables and your herbs and everything.
That's right. It's incredibly easy. Just put it out on the patio or the deck or even, you know, in a container out on the step. And you got a great source of lots of fresh vegetables and herbs. Good morning. You're on the Snow Nose Gardening Show.
Good morning. You're making the procrastinators in your audience feel very good this morning. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I feel so much better.
We say that because we are, you know, we're high up on the board of directors for the Procrastinators Club.
Well, so you're so busy helping everybody else.
That's right.
That's it.
Well, I have a question about the little bugs. There's something. I've got little pots of basil and other, you know, herbies that are getting ready to go out, and even some squash plants that are in the ground, and already they've got holes in the leaves. So maybe you could talk to us about what we can put on. Obviously, the basil, you're going to eat the leaves. That's why you grow it.
Right.
What do you suggest for people so they don't kill themselves while they're eating what they're trying to get rid of?
Yeah,
oh, we can just go out and eat the bugs, but I usually leave that for the birds.
You're missing out on all that extra protein.
That's right.
Yeah, right. Especially the stink bugs. They're so tasty.
Oh, I know. And that's actually something that we're going to need to really look out for. I was out walking around over the last couple of days and you know, just in some of the research and reading that I've been doing over the last 6-8 months that they've really been kind of in our face, quite literally. Stink bugs are
the Chinese plot. Conspiracy theorists are going wild. They're sending the stink bugs over. They can't, you know, they can't get rid of us otherwise. They're going to cripple our agriculture with stink bugs.
Stink bugs and the emerald ash borer, Asian longhorn beetle. But in addition to being a nuisance in the house, And getting up into the house and flying around and buzzing the lights in the evening and all that kind of stuff.
Psychotic behavior.
Yeah. But they also do a tremendous amount of feeding on vegetables and fruit.
Yes.
So
serious.
Yeah, the stink bugs, they're not just a problem in the house, but they're going to be a problem in the garden this spring and summer as well. So, you know, we joke about the stink bugs, but it's going to be something that, you know, that we really do need to keep an eye on and really be watching for in the garden and mindful that's going to be an issue. They love tomatoes, peppers, apples, peaches, anything with a big, fleshy, juicy fruit on it. It's going to be very attractive for them, and that's what they feed on. So not only do we have to worry about them in the house this fall again, but be mindful of them in the garden as well. I saw them even hanging out and spending a lot of time on some of the rose buds and blooms out in the nursery over the last week.
I see them hanging out on my desk.
Well, yeah.
When they bomb me while I'm walking in the garden, it's a friend of mine gave me a little butterfly net. I think it was a joke, but I'm worried. I'm thinking it might be a good thing.
Or get one of those beekeeper helmets with the face net.
Yeah.
So what can we use that's commercially available now before we lose our gardens this summer?
Yeah, there's a new product that's I think it's just really been introduced last fall and this spring. Called Bug Buster, that actually is one of the few things that's out there that is available for homeowner use that's actually labeled for stink bugs in the garden and just about anywhere else. I don't know that you can use it actually inside the house.
Yeah,
but I've got other things for inside the house.
Yeah, but for outside in the garden, and not just on the edible things, but the ornamentals and even the hard surface areas. You can use this Bug Buster on there, and it does a great job at knocking down the stink bugs, about as good as anything that there is out there.
Is it a spray or a powder?
It's a spray.
And y'all have it, I'm sure.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Bug Buster.
Right.
Like the name.
Yep. And it's not just for stink bugs. It's for a lot of other insects that can be a problem out there on the on the edibles and the ornamentals as well.
Right.
So it's oftentimes we end up with a product for each problem, but this one will handle multiple issues, so that's a good thing as well.
Yep.
Good. Well, tell the guys in the center to put it out front where everybody can see it, because there'll be hordes of people swarming.
Hopefully we'll have more people than stink bugs.
That's
we'll
right.
be able to get that population under control a little bit.
That's why they sent them from China.
I think so.
They're trying, yeah. They're working on it. Thank you, guys.
Hey, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now.
And as she was mentioning earlier, you know, we kind of got sidetracked there with the stink bugs, but we were talking about what can she put on her basil and those types of things. The most important thing is to always try to identify what it is that's causing the damage. You know, when
right.
you see something that's feeding on the leaf, you want to use, you know, something that is effective for that. So 7 or 8, either of those would mm-hmm. do fine in that scenario. And then for an organic solution, you know, you've got your rotenone pyrethrin or something mm-hmm. like that.
Well, pyrethrin, unfortunately, rotenone is gone.
But pyrethrin.
Pyrethrin, and also the sounds like a joke, but it's not. Captain Jack's Dead Bug Brew. It's an organic. It's a great product that has a good wide range of effectiveness, but is very, very minimally toxic to humans. And the big thing is on anything that you're spraying on edibles, read the label thoroughly, because there's on all of those edible products that are on there, or edible plants that you're treating, there will be, as on the way they typically list it on the labels, you'll see that you can spray it on tomatoes, and then after tomatoes there'll be in parentheses a little number after that. Squash will have another number, lettuce will have another number, peppers will be another number, and that number that comes after the name of the plant is the number of days from when you spray until it's safe to harvest.
Right.
So for tomatoes, it may have, in parentheses, it may say 7. That means from the day you spray, you have to wait 7 days before it's safe to eat the fruit off of those tomatoes. And it'll be a different number for each one of the different edible crops that you can spray it on. But be attentive to that number so that you're sure that you've waited long enough from the time that you spray till the time that you harvest.
I was looking at the label on that Deg Bug Brew the other day, and there's just about everything under the sun in there. It was, what, like nicotine and tobacco juice and all kinds of things.
It's good stuff. It really is. It's good stuff. And like I say, you know, it has great effectiveness on a wide range of insects, but also minimal toxicity for us as humans and pets and things like that. Other organisms in the environment that are desirable. So it's a good alternative in that organic arsenal. And it's, you know, I've said it before, I'll say it again, the organic arsenal really has been improved of late so that, you know, we do have products out there now that are not only green, but they're also effective.
Right.
And that was not necessarily the case a few years ago. You always kind of hesitated to recommend some of the organic stuff. You wanted to be green, but at the same time, you know, you want to be able to solve the problem. And a lot of the older organic products didn't necessarily work that well. But
right.
The new ones do.
And then you can always use them in combination. Sometimes
right.
The organic may not be as effective, but remember, you know, using them in combination, using, you know, the safest product that you can at the right time with the right label directions, all those will just make you a responsible gardener and, you know, keep some of the products around that we keep losing. So
that's right. We're down to about 30 seconds. We're
well, Glenn must have somewhere to go today. He's starting the time. You know, we still got a half hour left in the show, and Glenn's already turning the music on.
He just knows Corbin. I'm milking that thing to the very last second every week. He's over here going into heart palpitations trying to get us off the air.
We got time for about four more calls. Well, as we were told earlier today, we had a caller who called in and asked us to please beg those folks to get up off the sofa, go outside, because today's a beautiful day to work in the yard. So get up and go out and play in that yard.
That's right. And come out and see us at the Garden Center. We've got a great selection of stuff to help you do that, to help you solve problems and things, good things to plant. And we'll see you right back here next week.